Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the disconsolate voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Matthew.
Richard.
I mean, we had a bit of a decision, didn't we? It was, do we then try and be all jolly and happy and what have you? It's not going to happen, really. No. It's not going to happen. We're not going to make it too much of a depressing episode, of course, and there are lots of positives to take. And certainly, we're going to be talking a lot about Jordan Pickford, so lots and lots of positives to take. But yeah, today's not a great day, really.
This is not the intro I envisage for this podcast. I'll tell you now, I was going to start it with the It's Coming Home rendition that they did at Buckhouse a week ago before the Denmark game. I thought that would be brilliant. What a great way to start.
Yeah.
Can't do that.
No, can't do that. I'm kind of glad. I thought you might have gone for some like really depressing music, you know.
I thought about it, but like you said, I thought no. And disconsolate, to be fair, that's both of our voices today,
yes,
isn't it? And we should stress, any Italian listeners, well done. Congratulations.
Yes.
You've done extremely well.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
No, tough viewing. Really tough viewing. For the first 20 minutes, excellent viewing. Thoroughly enjoyable viewing.
It was.
Thoroughly enjoyable. Look,
very much in control. Obviously, incredible start. And yeah, at halftime, everything was looking very, very good. And then, of course, kind of clinging on a bit second half. Truth be told, I was quite happy in the end that we made penalties. You know, certainly at 70-odd minutes or whenever it was that we conceded and we were under the cosh a little bit, you felt, do you know, I'll take penalties right now. So when we actually made penalties, then you're thinking, okay, look, Jordan Pickford's obviously very, very good. And do you know, before we do talk about Jordan Pickford in a bit more detail, I do feel sorry for him because there's every chance, given his performance and given the two saves in the shootout, there was every chance for him. Ordinarily, that would mean he'd be front page today. You know, and he would be, what's the word I'm looking for, etched into history forevermore, you know, especially saving a Jorginho penalty and the performance in general throughout this tournament. So I did feel for him because there is very little more he could have done. But yeah, again, it kind of highlights the point that as a goalkeeper, there is only so much you can do.
I do think that he's certainly bumped up his profile again. To be honest, we actually had a tweet in from Tony B who said, given Donnarumma one player of the tournament, do you think Pickford would have won it had England won? And I think he probably would have done.
I think he would. I think he would. I know, of course, some excellent players and a lot's been made of obviously Sterling's performances in particular. And Luke Shaw's been superb as well. And Harry Maguire, Harry Kane, certainly back half of the tournament. You know, so there's been a lot of very good performances. But I think, I mean, look, we are biased on the show, of course, but watching Jordan Pickford in detail throughout this tournament, given that there were some question marks leading up to it, certainly earlier in the season for Everton, I think he's been absolutely superb. And in the final, you know, how many times over the years has an England keeper in a big game made an error in a big game and perhaps have it tarnish their reputation ever so slightly? In fairness to Jordan Pickford, for England, every time it's come to a big game, he has performed. And certainly, again, yesterday, I thought that was the case. And as I say, very little more he could have done.
Well, there are many layers to the final yesterday, which we don't need to get into because that's not what this podcast is for. I'm sure they are discussed on numerous other podcasts. We are going to stick with goalkeeping. So we'll first talk about Pickford. We'll then talk about Gianluigi Donnarumma, of course, the player of the tournament. We've got Asmir Begovic coming up.
About to say, I thought we were going to have that as like a bit of a big reveal, like a special guest. But you've just given it away.
I've ruined it.
But yes, we do have Asmir Begovic. We've pre-recorded this. He's given a very in-depth, detailed analysis of Donnarumma and obviously knows him very well from his time at AC Milan. So it was we've had a good chat with him. In fact, I found that really interesting, a lot of the things that he said. So certainly look forward to that later on in the show.
We've also got the big giveaway. Don't forget about that. The gloves, yes, the prize draw will be coming up later.
Absolutely.
Very excited about that. And of course, the show must go on. So a transfer roundup is back,
yes.
Richard, too.
There you go. Quite the episode.
Quite the episode indeed. Before we move on, I just want to say that actually for the first time ever today, I watched a full episode of the Cycling GK.
Okay.
Just haven't had time to make it part of my daily, weekly routine. But I thought, do you know what? I'm going to give it a go today. And very good episode, Ben. Very funny as well, which was a good thing. He sort of trailed the episode from the moment he let his son know that they were going to go, which was lovely because his son wasn't aware. He managed to get tickets from Kieran Trippier.
Wow.
So Kieran Trippier just had a couple of tickets, just handy. Here you go, Ben. Go along. But it was really interesting because, again, I've not seen these properly before, so I don't know whether this is just par for the course, but he was just like a fan. He was just in with the crowd. He was walking to the game. He did allude to the slightly strange atmosphere, and he called it as well. He said, if we lose tonight, I sense this might not be as pleasant as people think it could have been had we won. But there was a guy next to him in the ground, in the stadium, in a goalkeeper top first, which is great. I don't know whether that was just lucky. Also, when he was walking to the ground, no one really recognised him. I don't know whether he's cut those bits out, but no one was jumping in front of the camera just saying, "Hey, Ben," because he just looked like another member of the public. But there was also a guy in the stadium, and I showed you this earlier, to the left of him, who displayed zero emotion from start to finish. I'm sure, in fact, I'm convinced he was just a statue.
Yeah.
He was a cardboard cutout.
It's worth watching the episode for that alone.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it, get on and see the guy to the left of Ben, the right as we look it throughout the game, completely nonplussed.
Yeah, it was incredibly strange. I just can't help but feel that maybe he wasn't meant to be there, or whether he just didn't support. Maybe he was just going just for a game of football.
Do you think he just rocked up and thought, oh, this is quite fun? Maybe he was one of the guys who snuck into the ground. Maybe that's what it is. What's going on here? This looks like fun.
Yeah, I'll watch this game. Like the guy that kind of rocks up in the park and watches a game in the park just because, you know, Italy, England, why not?
Okay, well, look, we've got a few tweets as well. So if you'd like to get in touch with us for any reason, please do so. It's very easy. At GK Union on Twitter, hello at goalkeepersunion.net, or on our phone number 07503673020. On with the show.
Yeah, let's do it.
I thought he had a brilliant tournament. I mean, Jordan has often been, you know, the number of times I've sat here and his place in the team has been questioned, and he's constantly delivered for us. And this tournament, I think, was his best run of performances for England, and he should be hugely proud of that. To concede 2 goals in 7 matches, you know, our whole defence, our whole team, but of course the goalkeeper was a big part of that. 2 saves in the shootout. So, you know, he could do a little more in terms of keeping the ball out of our net, and that's always the starting point for any goalkeeper. So, yeah, he had a really outstanding tournament.
Gareth Southgate there speaking glowingly of Jordan Pickford. Richard, before I come to you, just some tweets that came in overnight as well. Evan Dando, when he first came in as number one, I was uncertain. Looks solid for England now, has grown into that role. Anthony Cash, Jordan has had a brilliant tournament, onwards and upwards to the World Cup as England's number one. England's Irie needs his Barnett sorting out though. Songbird, I love how Pickford uses every millimetre of his body to save shots. A. Dobson, best England keeper since David Seaman. Paul Diamond, got to give Martin Margotson huge credit, picked up on the technical aspects of his game that needed work and ensured he developed. Clearly he's worked on being calmer in key moments, which has shone through in the tournament. He's been unreal. And George Hyde said the save from the low cross was huge in the game and not talked about enough, and Andy Greaves agreed with that and said, picked it out at the time, so brave how we went in and somehow batted it away with his backhand. Could easily have stayed on his line and watched the guy knock it in. Same with the long ball over the top that he came out and forced him to put over the bar. Brave goalkeeping, Jordan Pickford. Richard,
actually, do you know what, that's pretty much hit the nail on the head there. A couple of the moments I was going to talk about were those two moments, because they're not going to get reported. That one over the top where he's come out and effectively got to the flight of the ball and he's ended up blazing it over the bar. If Jordan Pickford isn't there, then that is obviously a much easier situation. But he's managed to get close enough and effectively created a block. I think most goalkeepers stay on the line there. Or if they do come, don't quite get close enough, and that becomes a much easier finish. And the cross, as mentioned, again, he got close enough to the player that had the player have made contact, he was right next to the player, and obviously also still went for the initial ball. You know, how many times do you see a cross sneak in the far post because the focus is on the player that's coming in? But again, made himself very big while still focusing on the initial ball and getting a big hand to kind of bat it away. I mean, other than that, very good save down low to his left in the first half in particular. And arguably the best save he made, annoyingly, was on the goal. You know, phenomenal save down low to his right, the speed at which he got down and just couldn't quite get enough to get it round the post. But again, if that ball's cleared, then we're talking about this morning, and that could have been the headline. And then I touched on it, the two penalty saves that he made, both brilliant saves. I said at the start of the shootout, so I was watching it with my family, and I said that if it goes to the fifth penalty and Jorginho's got the penalty to win it, we've lost, because he doesn't miss penalties. He's up there. You know, when we talk a lot about the different penalty techniques, and for me, he's as good as anyone. He's as good as an Ivan Toney. And I know I speak about Ivan Toney's penalty technique a lot, but he's up there with him in that he waits for the goalkeeper to make a move and goes the other way. You showed me the footage of what he did to Jordan Pickford last time. which was exactly that. He waited for Jordan Pickford to go, put it in the other corner. This was back in March, wasn't it? So for Jordan Pickford to save a Jorginho penalty, ordinarily we'd be on here. That would have been the winning save and we would have been going crazy because that just doesn't happen. Jorginho in the semi-final getting the winning penalty, and it looked like Unai Simon was clapping him before the ball had even gone into the net. You know, such a good penalty technique. So no, I can't. I did put a tweet out myself last night because I can't speak highly enough about him. There have been times, of course, this season at Everton where certain things have been questioned, but I'd have to agree again with the tweet in regards to Martin Margetson. Whether it is Martin Margetson's influence, whether it is playing the style of football that England play, whatever it is, it does feel like this really does bring out the best of Jordan Pickford. And of course, I suppose the one question will be now from Everton fans, if he just shows that level of consistency, which in fairness he did back end of the season, it must be said. But if it is a case now of him stepping up to that next level, if he continues this level of consistency, then no doubt there's going to be many more major tournaments for him. And given the mentality that he has, no doubt it will just be a matter of time before he is goalkeeper of the tournament and picking up the winner's trophy as opposed to runner-up.
It is amazing how he still seems to get just a little bit of stick. And again, it's a smaller minority now online. I was looking after the game again yesterday, and we shouldn't worry ourselves too much with a select few, but it was just some that said he's still not as good as you think he is. And actually, we got called out for being a bit biased in our reporting of Jordan Pickford, which is ridiculous because we've been very balanced about Pickford over the years. He did finish the season very well with Everton. And when you watch that game yesterday, when you watch this tournament, he is creeping closer to world class. I thought yesterday he was so assured. There was that moment inside the opening minute, wasn't there, with the pass back with Harry Maguire. You thought, what's happened here? Bit of miscommunication between the two, but not a problem at all. And he just looks, like we said on the last podcast, he looks so much more authoritative. At times, he's got like a pained expression on his face when he's playing for England. Do you notice that? When he's with Everton, he's slightly more relaxed, joking. With England, he's grimacing more.
Yeah, I do. And it's, I mean, look, he is very expressive. Is that the word? Mm-hmm. Expressive, you know, and certainly, I mean, look, there's different thoughts on that. I know, I suppose my belief on goalkeepers, and a lot of this is based on watching the likes of, I don't know, Peter Schmeichel, Manuel Neuer, where they're very different. Like, but don't get me wrong, Peter Schmeichel could get very angry and certainly scream and shout. But, you know, Manuel Neuer, it's more of a kind of stern look. And he never really shows too much emotion, whereas I'd certainly say that Jordan Pickford was the other end of the spectrum. Now, I know some people like that, some people don't. There's no right or wrong. I do feel at times that you're right. He does give that kind of look of being a bit agitated. And look, we spoke about the free kick that he conceded in the semi-final, and you know, the fact that he was quite unsettled almost as it's going on and still trying to sort things out as a free kick's being taken. So I know some will argue that maybe that is the next level for him, that if he can continue to become more and more calm, you know, because he's certainly got no issues in terms of getting himself pumped up, and mentally he's fantastic for big games. He's a big game goalkeeper, that's fair to say. And actually, look, a lot of his best performances for Everton as well, I believe, have come in the bigger games. You know, we talk about some of the mistakes. I remember there was a couple against Fleetwood, no disrespect to Fleetwood, but you know, you kind of notice that maybe being the type of character he is, that very much brings out the best in him. So again, it's kind of packaging that and then building on that consistency, because again, he is still a reasonably young goalkeeper. You know, if he is going to go on into his mid-30s and there's no reason why he can't continue to improve until then that is very exciting, I believe, for an England fan. And yeah, people say we're, you know, we've been too biased. I remember it wasn't so long ago we were having conversations as to whether it should be Nick Pope or Jordan Pickford, and I remember saying openly that I thought Nick Pope at the time deserved the nod. And I stand by that. I think that period of the season, I thought Nick Pope was outshining him. And that being said, of course, Nick Pope, the unfortunate injury. But regardless whether Nick Pope had got the injury or not, I think the way that Jordan Pickford then finished the season coming into the summer, and the fact that whenever he's put on an England shirt to date, he has been very, very good. And for me, I think he was certainly top three England players in this tournament, if not the star player.
Yeah, and the goals that he conceded at the tournament too, not one from open play. If you think about that, I know the goal, the equaliser from Bonucci, it was from a set piece, wasn't it? It was from a corner. So every goal he conceded was essentially from a dead ball. But let's get into the penalties. I know you've already touched on the Jorginho penalty, but let's break these down, because you obviously watch these intently, so much so now. You look at what the goalkeeper's doing, you look at what Pickford's doing, you look at what Donnarumma is doing. And I thought it was interesting, a slight contrast actually, with Donnarumma and his goalkeeper coach, his teammates. They were sort of laughing and joking with Donnarumma, whereas Pickford just seemed slightly more serious this time out. We always refer back to the Colombia penalty shootout when he was laughing and joking with Nick Pope and Jack Butland at the time. But this time, slightly more serious. He did all the same things. He took the ball, he gave it to the players, made them in charge of their own penalty prep. But the saves. So the first save was from Belotti. Very good save, that one. And then the Jorginho save, which you've mentioned already. Again, that penalty that he scored against him for Chelsea against Everton. I saw some stats. There was a really good article on The Athletic prior to this game, actually. And this was his 35th penalty, Jorginho, since his first for Napoli. That was back in 2017. He's done the hop, skip and jump in all of his penalties but one. And all five of the saved penalties he's had have been to the right side of the goal. So obviously Pickford went to his left last time out, to the right this time out. But he held his position, didn't he?
That's the point, yeah. It's irrelevant. All the saves will always be to the goalkeeper's right, by the way. Because that penalty technique, essentially the rule is that you obviously go very slowly up to the ball. And if the goalkeeper moves, you go the other way. If the goalkeeper doesn't move, you always pull it across yourself because you get a lot more power. You think if you're hitting it from effectively a standing position, you've got no momentum, to then open up your body and go in the other corner is impossible. So, Jorginho, the majority of the penalties will always go that way because a goalkeeper will always wait and wait for Jorginho to take the strike and then dive to the right. Ordinarily, you're not able to get the distance on the dive if you don't dive beforehand. So ordinarily, the ball will go in. That's what made this save so special because Jorginho still pretty much hit the corner. It wasn't like it was yards inside the post. It's still so tight to the corner and Pickford wasn't allowed to move until it was struck. So we can't underestimate the speed at which he was able to get down and make the save.
And it was epic. That save at that moment was just... I haven't gone crazy watching football for a long time, but I lost it. When he made that save, I just went absolutely ballistic.
And that's the bit where, as I say, there's only so much you can do as a goalkeeper. And, you know, we spoke of examples on this show before that you could make your worst error, but the team win 4-1, no one cares. But if you make your worst error and the team lose 1-0, you're the villain, you know, of course. So it's kind of like this. Look, another day, we could have been opening the papers today and Jordan Pickford is idolised. Absolute hero, etched into history forevermore because of what he did last night. But unfortunately, of course, you know, we were only able to score two of the five penalties ourselves. But, you know, look, ordinarily, if you're a goalkeeper and you save two penalties in a shootout, you're devastated if you haven't won the game.
There's a video going around on social media as well, isn't there, of him saying no problem. I don't know whether you saw that before Jorginho stepped up. The camera went to Pickford and he's sort of shaking his head, going, no problem, no problem, not a problem, I'm fine, no problem. I think he was talking to the referee who was saying, stay on your line. It's gone round that he's saying to himself, no problem, I'm going to save this, no problem. I actually thought that when I initially saw it. When I rewatched it today, I thought, I think he's talking to the referee. Let's just get into a bit of psychology as well on the penalties, because I know you're very strong on this. And something I noticed, and a lot of other people noticed, was the guys who missed, not so much Jadon Sancho, but first Belotti, you could see he had a really dry mouth, didn't he? He was licking his lips. He was sort of just trying to sort himself out. Marcus Rashford adjusting his shirt just before he took his penalty. And then Bukayo Saka, I don't know whether you noticed, just before he took his, he had a little flick of his nose like that. Just brought up his nose. And it's the kind of movement that players always make in interviews. You know, when they're slightly nervous when they're speaking to a reporter and they're either scratch their head or they pull their ear or they put their fingers around their lips or their nose. That's what he did. And I thought, that's not a good sign. Am I reading too much into that? Or is it a coincidence that for each penalty taker who missed, there was just a little nuance in their body language before?
I mean, yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean, for me, I think a bigger part to this is who you're up against. Look, we did an episode not so long ago about David De Gea and how he really struggled in the penalty shootout in the Europa League final. And we spoke a bit about presence and whether he was really exuding that. Well, look, you've got two goalkeepers here. Certainly in terms of Donnarumma, physically so imposing. If you're stepping up as a player and you see this man mountain who, I mean, the goal just must look so small, you know, and I could imagine that. And you've got 90,000 people. Look, there's so much more to this as well. And I know this is a goalkeeping podcast, so we won't get into this, but the lads that have just come on, you actually consider the psychological state they would have been in. They don't really feel part of the game. They have literally just come on to take a penalty. So the increased pressure or perceived pressure, because essentially you have been brought on just to do this, which is then going to give Donnarumma a lift, I'm sure, because again, he knows they're not necessarily that warm. They haven't kicked a ball for the last 2 hours and now they've got to step up in front of 90,000 and however many million on TV in one of the biggest moments of their lives. The other bit as well, I think, is that with a Donnarumma, you know you have to hit the corner. And I'm convinced, and actually Asmir will touch on this as well in the interview with him, but if you're a Marcus Rashford or any of those penalty takers, if you're going to beat Donnarumma, you hope he dives the wrong way. If he dives the correct way, you've got to put that right in the corner. And with Rashford, I'm convinced that's why he hit the post and he didn't go just inside the post. I think if you get a goalkeeper that maybe doesn't show that kind of presence, Marcus Rashford isn't necessarily hitting the corner. He is going a yard inside the post because he believes his technique will mean that the goalkeeper dives the other way. Marcus Rashford did everything right. You know, he saw the movement of Donnarumma and for whatever reason, he still tried to put it right in a postage stamp rather than 2-3 yards inside the post, which of course would have been fine. But I think that's a huge, huge part and something you can't underestimate is the goalkeeper's presence, which isn't necessarily something that we can put into words a lot of the time. You know, yes, physically, the physicality of a goalkeeper will play a part. You will see it and that will make, but also the confidence that they exude. And look, we're talking about two goalkeepers here who we know Jordan Pickford, what he can do on penalties, but Donnarumma, you see him stood there and he looks so composed, so confident. And I've got no doubt that that played a huge, huge part in the fact that the penalties weren't perhaps as good as we thought they would be.
I do hear what you're saying with regards to the players coming on right at the end of extra time and not being warmed into the game. But I suppose you can look at the Europa League final, can't you? And the fact that Juan Mata and it was Alex Tellez, wasn't it, that came on for United for the penalty shootout and both hit very convincing penalties. I don't know. It's difficult. Like you said, this was a slightly grander stage. And it's so easy, isn't it, to be an after-timer. But when penalties were about to be taken, I was sitting with a mate and he said, right, who's your five? And Kane, obviously. I said Rashford and Sancho because why else would they have come on at that time? I said Harry Maguire. So I had the four. And in being completely genuine, I said Jordan Pickford because I absolutely believed that he should have taken a penalty. And there's another video going around, isn't there, that suggests that he was going to be taken number six, I think it was. In that video, it does seem apparent that he's not happy. I don't know. Again, who knows what happened on that pitch, but it just looked like he was having a conversation with Martin Margotson. Then Martin Margotson went to Steve Holland and Holland went to Southgate and they were sort of moving things around. But I think he should have taken a penalty. And I also believe that there's still a stigma with a goalkeeper taking a penalty in a penalty shootout. And I reckon, and I could be completely wrong, but I reckon that's potentially one of the reasons why he wasn't in that five, because having a goalkeeper in your opening five penalties just looks a bit like, oh, crikey, this is a bit circus-like, when it's absolutely not. He would have been fully confident, Pickford, to take a penalty, and I would have had him in my five.
Yeah, I agree. Look, I think he would have been fine. Of course, we saw the penalty. What was the game that we saw the penalty?
Switzerland,
of course it was, and it was a very good penalty. I think the other bit to consider as well is the fact that Pickford did have such a good tournament. There is also that side of things, and this does relate to goalkeeping. In fact, I can give a personal story on this where it does relate to goalkeeping a bit, where I remember playing against Everton and when Brentford beat Everton and I saved a Jermaine Beckford penalty. I knew at the time Jermaine Beckford was getting a lot of stick from the Everton fans. I could sense it. You could sense it in the stadium. And I remember him picking up the ball and I could feel that he wasn't as confident as maybe he might have been the season before. And at the time, I'd had a really, really good game and I was feeling very, very confident. And there's almost an energy exchange. That's all I can explain it as, that you kind of see each other and you know in that moment whether you've got the better of them or not. And I just knew as soon as he was stepping up, I felt so confident I was going to save the penalty. Now, the reason I make that point is that I think that for a lot of the players taking it, you almost want the players that are on a bit of a high. So Harry Kane, yes, of course. Harry Maguire, yes, of course. Luke Shaw, you know, I would have said, having had the tournament, you know, so much positivity behind him. Jordan Pickford, so much positivity. And again, as you say, it's so easy to do this in hindsight. I wonder, and I was thinking about this morning, whether they have somebody that is a penalty specialist of sorts, because I've got no doubt they have every different specialist going, you know, England and all the different clubs now, but certainly for England, going into a major tournament, given the psychology, given the teams you're going to face, you know, if someone were to do the research, you could know who you're likely to face, who's likely to take penalties, which penalty takers should be taking penalties based on performances, also based on their technique, what your ideal 1-2-3-4-5 would be like. I've got no doubt there is a science behind it. And I've no doubt there's a lot of people that would be qualified in order to take up that role and put a little bit more behind it. Because it kind of feels like for England, yes, we beat Colombia, you know, and what's it, 2 out of 9, I think we've won now. But you know, the chances are the next major tournament, there is going to be a penalty shootout again. And it is so frustrating. You know, that was 6 out of 9. We're probably sat here now having won a couple of World Cups. You know, it is as simple as that, as far as I'm concerned. But
can we still be having that conversation, though? I'm sure, I mean, Gareth Southgate said, didn't he? We replicate it every day on the training ground. We even replicate the walk from the halfway line to the penalty spot.
That's the point. I don't think you can replicate it. Like, I know, I think, of course, you can practice. But I know from the penalty shootouts that I was involved in that moment, it's so different. Training ground, I didn't save anything. Like, no chance, you know, and they'd be rolling them in and doing this. But to recreate that type of intensity is almost impossible. And it's, I guess that's the question. It's how do you do that? Because if we could suddenly become very good at penalty shootouts, you look, Italy, what are they, was it 2 penalty shootouts they won in order to win the...
First time ever in the Euros.
Yeah. Mm. You know, as an example, like, look, they could very easily have lost to Spain. Of course they could. It was a penalty shootout. They could very easily have lost to England. But for me, this is where penalty shootouts aren't luck, and this is where certain managers will more than happily go to a penalty shootout, especially when you've got Donnarumma in goal. You happily go to a penalty shootout. And I just think that maybe going into the next major tournament, yes, practice, of course, but there's got to be a level of above that, because the chances are we're going to face a penalty shootout in the next major tournament, and there needs to be a little bit more behind what actually happens, as opposed to end of training, quick, everyone take a couple of penalties, make sure you're ready, let's go.
What we need is market research.
There you go.
Employ one of the big companies. We need a big focus group. Put some bleachers up at St George's Park, some fake stands, get everybody in and take penalties that way.
There you go.
That's how you practice.
That's how you do it.
Or, and I think we spoke about this on the podcast with him, employing someone like a Dan Abrahams to go through the psychology of it as well. I think he has worked with the England national team before, hasn't he? Mm. But that's just another tool that you can use.
Yeah, I think so. Something like that could be useful. I mean, the one that I was thinking was that, you know, going into a game, and this is where if you did have somebody in this kind of role, realistically, these players would know, you know, well in advance. I'm sure they did know well in advance, but then it would also be working with them and talking to them about the penalties they are about to take. And you could go into real depth, and that could be a psychologist of sorts. It could be someone who's been there, done it, etc., kind of going through in such detail. So they're trying to recreate that, whether that's using a bit of imagery, visualization. I know so many of you goalkeepers do this anyway when it comes to your games, but, you know, doing something where you really are putting yourself in the moment, you're feeling the state that you would feel going into that big moment. Look, it's something that obviously fascinates me quite a lot. And I don't know, I just feel that, and again, it's kind of slightly off topic, we are a goalkeeping podcast here, but of course it does very much involve the goalkeeper. And certainly now you do feel, you've got to give Jordan Pickford a lot of credit, you do feel that going into a penalty shootout, we certainly have a goalkeeper who you'd feel very comfortable and more than capable when it comes to the shootout. So, you know, perhaps, I know that Gareth Southgate very much is a man of detail. Maybe this is the next detail.
Yes, indeed. It is coming home, Richard. According to Gianluigi Donnarumma, he posted that on his Instagram story in the Italian dressing room after the game. We focused on Jordan Pickford. Now it's time to move over to the player of the tournament, no less, in Donnarumma. But first, before we get your thoughts, I am delighted to say that we have friend of the show on the line right now, current Bournemouth goalkeeper and ex-teammate with Donnarumma himself, Asmir Begovic. Hello, Asmir.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Very good. Thank you. Richard has spoken about this many times, haven't you, on the podcast, about the fact that Asmir has worked previously with Gigio, not Gigi Donnarumma. We've got that wrong in the past, Richard.
Okay. Gigio.
Gigio.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that what you called him, Asmir? Gigio?
Gigio. Gigio.
Gigio. Okay. So, Rich, you've got some questions, haven't you, on this?
Yeah, I have. And do you know what? It partly comes down to, Asmir, we had a chat a while ago, and I remember at the time you asked me about him. And I'll be honest, my knowledge of him at that time was very limited, other than knowing he broke in at a very young age, had racked up a lot of games. I hadn't seen that much of him, so I didn't really give much of an opinion at the time. But I just remember you coming back saying he's phenomenal, fantastic. And I remember you speaking so glowingly. And I've sort of kept a bit more of an eye on him since then. Obviously, during this tournament, you can't help but keep an eye on him. I mean, just so imposing. And obviously, player of the tournament, which is so unusual for a goalkeeper to get that. And deservedly so. You know, he's been fantastic. But I thought it'd be really good to get you on the show just to give a bit of an insight, I guess, because I remember when, and it was when you just left Milan to come back to England, so it must have been about a year ago, I guess, that we had that conversation. And just remembering how glowingly you spoke about him back then, I just wanted to get a few thoughts from you as to where he's at now, what you've seen, if you still speak to him, your thoughts on him in this tournament.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Well, thanks for having me on the podcast, guys. You know, what can I say about Gigio? I mean, as the period we spent together, working, pushing each other, you know, we grew, I think, a really nice respect with one another. And we still keep in touch from time to time and exchange messages, which is nice. But, you know, I was able to see firsthand what sort of a goalkeeper he is. And for me, as I mentioned to you in our previous conversations, Rich, and what we've done in the past, is he is phenomenal. It doesn't surprise me one bit that he was the player of the tournament, but if not the player, the goalkeeper of the tournament. And what he's been able to achieve in this last month has been no surprise to me. He has everything that you want in a goalkeeper. For me, arguably, you know, we can throw in other names, the best in the world. And the scary thing is his age. You know, I never thought he was 10 years younger than me. His physical attributes, he's an absolute physical specimen. The way he pushes, the way he can cover the goal is incredible. I mean, you look at some of those penalties last night, he could have, rather than even pushing them away, he was almost catching them or eating them. So, you know, it's that he has a huge presence, and he plays the game where he can control all the other attributes as well. He's very strong with crosses. He holds good positions. He works at his feet, at his distribution. That's probably the one part he knows. And people of our size is the most difficult thing. When you're 6'6", 6'7", size 13, 14 feet, it's difficult to pass and strike a ball like some others. So it's something he works on, his work ethic, you know, his training, the way he pushes himself. And he wants to be the world's best. And he thinks he is the world's best. And I think that's almost half the battle. And I think that's what has taken his game to this level. And now you can look at him as one of the top, if not the top goalkeeper in the world.
I mean, that was one of the questions I wanted to ask, actually, was his mental setup. I mean, actually, before I touch on that, there was the save, and we highlighted it on the show, the save against Belgium, I think it was, wasn't it, Kevin De Bruyne, which, I mean, I watched that over and over, and I almost felt I was a bit frustrated the commentators didn't give that more attention. And it was the fact that he is the size he is as powerful as he is, and also incredibly agile for his size to get up to that and get to it so comfortably. A ball that was curling out to in into the top corner from 18 yards struck so strongly. I just felt that beats most goalkeepers. And it was one that, again, commentators didn't really touch on it too much, but I saw everything in that movement, the way in which he got up to his right so quickly. I mean, will he do extra work on that? I mean, how much of it is natural, and how much of that will be plyometrics in the gym, the kind of work that he does with his coaches, or did with his coaches back at Milan?
Yeah, it definitely is a combination. I mean, one is, I think he is naturally gifted. That's for sure. I mean, those physical genes are not something you can teach, you know, to grow the way he's grown and filled out the way he's filled out is, you know, any goalkeeper coach in the world is not going to be able to give you 5 inches. So part of it is genetics, absolutely his natural ability. And second is his work ethic. And yeah, and that was maybe one thing that in the couple of years before was lacking a little bit of too much comfort. Whereas in the last 18 months, he's really pushed himself. And I think he's taken that next step to be where he's at now. And it is a part of gym work. He does work in the gym. We've done some work with the cables, the resistance cables, no heavy weights, nothing like that, but just that explosiveness, that little bit of resistance training that can really translate onto the pitch has been incredible. As you said, that save against De Bruyne, to the naked eye, it probably looked somewhat comfortable. And as I said about the penalties last night, it looked very comfortable. But because we as goalkeeper people appreciate what it takes for him to make those saves and almost look comfortable, is what's incredible. And as I said, commentators, people will just brush it off, but it's incredibly impressive.
Well, that was, so there was a couple of moments as well. The penalty saved against Morata for a start, you know, Morata walking up and you could see visibly Morata looked scared as he was putting the ball down, and obviously wasn't a great penalty, but you just always felt Donnarumma was in control of that situation. And I felt that a little bit last night as I'm watching the penalties, the two that he saved in particular. Again, he just, I suppose the confidence that he exudes, and I'm guessing you would have seen that firsthand, the fact that he made his debut as young as he did, it's so rare for a goalkeeper to break in at a top club as young as he did. I can only assume that mentally he must be so sound.
Yeah, he is. I mean, to deal with what he's dealt with for the last 5 years, starting at 16, playing for AC Milan and San Siro, I mean, God only knows what I was doing at 16, but he has that aura about him. He has that drive. It was incredible. He obviously had his brother. He was part of our group, and his father met his family, and you can see why he's been able to have that drive and something that's taken him to the highest level. And that's the mentality he can almost put on the opposing player. I mean, one of the things, Rich, you know, when you play, one of the best things that the feeling I have is when I'm making the striker or the attacker think a bit more about their finish. So I've already got an inch on them. If they're trying to do a bit more, that will more likely than not make them miss their target and where they were aiming. And you look at those penalties, for them to score against Donnarumma, that penalty had to be as perfect as Kane's was, the first one, as perfect as Maguire's was. Anything other than that, if he is going the right side, he's going to save. And that's obviously me looking at Rashford's miss. He's probably trying to do too much, you know, whereas he could have just placed it and he would have gone the wrong way. And there you go. So I think that aura he has, what he's been able to establish with his games, with the way he's played, is having a big, I think, a huge impact.
And I've got to ask about his move, because obviously he has now left AC Milan. He's gone to Paris Saint-Germain. I mean, I can only say, as someone over here, would love to have seen him come over here. I don't know if that was an option or whether there were. I know there's the odd rumour of him potentially being of interest to a few of the bigger clubs over here, but of course that didn't materialise. Just more of an opinion, really. Do you think that's the right move for him to go to PSG?
Well, I think that move says a lot about him. He could have stayed in Milan and he could have been a legend there, which maybe he was thinking was the safe move. But he's gone to challenge himself again. And yeah, privately speaking, I would have loved to have seen him in England as well. And, you know, I don't know where that opening would have been, but he's gone and challenged himself again. He's gone out of his comfort zone, going away from Italy. He's going to go to a new place, a new demand, and where, you know, titles are a must. Champions League will be a must. So he's gone to push himself again and get out of his comfort zone. And I think that's impressive. I think he could have taken a good contract, stayed at Milan, been very comfortable there, but he's gone again. And that shows the mentality of sort of the type of animal that he is to go again, push himself and try and be an even better version of himself.
What's he like as a man, Asmir, as well? Because I know this has been spoken about a lot during the tournament, but firstly, his reaction when he saved that winning penalty was just ridiculous. I know that's gone viral, the fact that he was so calm, so collected, but he just seems so cool, like nothing phases him at all. Is he like that on the training pitch as well?
Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely. He's a really good guy, away from the pitch. You know, we had a couple of dinners and lunches together and, you know, he's just a cool guy. He's got his girlfriend, his family around, and his brother is around, and just a really cool guy down earth. But on the pitch, you know, as much as he shows a calm demeanor, he's incredibly fiery. He's got a big voice, a big persona, that sort of Italian blood in him for sure. You can see sometimes in a couple of other actions, but as for his game, he's very comfortable with his game. He knows what he wants to do and doesn't let anyone else tell him really otherwise. So he really just lives in his own world and executes his best attributes to the best of his abilities. I think now the world is sort of seeing what he's capable of. I think what's held him back a little bit has probably been the Milan have been in a bit of a bad spot in his early years. So he hasn't been able to show off and obviously Gigi Buffon for playing so long. So he hasn't really been on that stage just yet. He didn't qualify for the last World Cup. He wasn't, all these kind of things. So now he's able to really show himself on the biggest stage. And I think he's very much driven by that. I think he wants to show the world that he's the best. And I think that's what the whole PSG move and now with Italy is going to be all about. I know that he has his eyes set firmly on some of the biggest records that are in the game. And, I hope for him and everything that he has an incredibly long, healthy career and that he's able to break as many of those records as possible.
Nice one, Asmir. Thank you very much for joining us.
Guys, thank you.
Always good to talk to Asmir Begovic, isn't it?
Yeah, no, and a real insight into Donnarumma. So Gigio.
So Gigio. Yeah, so we all thought it was Gigi. It's not. Of course, it was Gigi Buffon. Now it's Gigio. And Chiellini, Giorgio Chiellini, after the game, did say, despite falling behind, we were always in charge of the game. And then for penalties, we had Gigioni. We went from Gigi to Gigio.
There you go.
I hope I haven't been too offensive with my Italian accent.
No, look, I think Asmir said it all there. I've been so impressed with him this tournament. Just an incredible specimen. You know, if you were going to design a goalkeeper to have that kind of power, agility, given the size that he is, I thought he was very good again in the game. You know, looked very assured in what he did. A couple of crosses he came for in particular. I think it was an outswinging cross from memory that he's come a good 10 yards for and just made look so easy. And no, certainly, I think Asmir's given far more detail than I ever could. But look, he's so young. And it's just funny how things work out where they've had Buffon for so long. You know, Italian number one for so long. And if you're a betting man, this guy's going to be their number one for the next 15 years. He'll be the next one. It's as simple as that. I've seen a lot of the things going around Instagram where, you know, they've mocked up like Buffon handing the crown over to him. And it is essentially that. You know, you've got a goalkeeper that's so young, so talented, has an incredible mentality. And it wouldn't surprise me if he goes on and plays as many games as Buffon did for Italy.
Crazy how those things work out, isn't it? Yeah. Just the timing of it. It really is like it's meant to be. 176 games for Italy, Buffon won the World Cup. Donnarumma, at 22 years old, 33 games already, and he's won a Euros and is now, like we discussed with Asmir, player of the tournament. The technical observers on that panel are interesting, by the way. Two goalkeepers, Paki Bonner and Franz Hürk. On that panel as well. So they've done a bit for the goalkeepers union there. But an interesting selection of characters. Capello's on there. Cambiasso.
Okay.
Robbie Keane.
Wow.
David Moyes. Miksu Patilainen.
Yeah.
Stefan Freund is on there as well. Plus a few more. So
well, there you go. And it is nice to see a goalkeeper because, as you say, it's so rare to have a goalkeeper as player of the tournament. So
one other in the Euros, Richard.
Oh, go on.
Come on. You know this.
Do I know this?
Yes, of course you do.
Go on. It's Manuel Neuer.
No.
Go on.
Why would you know about it? You've spoken about it numerous times before.
Peter Schmeichel.
There you go.
There you go. Well, there you go.
GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way. GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way.
Yes, there have been a few goalkeepers on the move over the past week or so, and they are. First one is a really nice story, actually. Zaki Wala, I think that's how we pronounce his name. I actually know Zaki quite well, and he's been in and around Wimbledon for many, many years, training goalkeeper, plays for Leatherhead, very, very good goalkeeper, technically incredibly sound. I used to work with him sometimes, several training sessions. Top keeper. The big thing, and I hate saying it because we both suffered a similar reputation of not quite being tall enough. But credit to Wimbledon, they have given him a chance, given him his first professional contract. And again, saying this from first-hand knowledge, he really is a very, very talented goalkeeper. So I really hope he gets an opportunity there because, again, we're seeing, I think, more goalkeepers that aren't 6'4", 6'5". And it's quite nice to see goalkeepers that maybe are 5'10", 5'11", being given their chance and showing that those extra couple of inches, what was the quote? A couple of Cadbury's cream eggs, wasn't it? Who was it who said that? I know it was a goalkeeper. I'm going to leave that with you, Matt. You're going to be Googling that now.
No, it was Gareth Southgate, wasn't it? Talking about Jordan Pickford being... It was something about another goalkeeper said that... Yeah, let's have a look at that, shall we? Carry on.
Okay, next on my list, Liam Kelly has gone from QPR to Motherwell. Of course, had a run of games for QPR, wasn't quite able to hold down that first team spot. And of course, last season you had Senny Dieng do so well. Joe Lumley, of course, back up as well there. So his chances were limited. But having been on loan in Scotland, did very, very well. But no doubt he will be number one at Motherwell. Aaron Chapman has left Motherwell and gone to Gillingham. Chapman, who is, I think he is about 6'7". He is a very, very tall goalkeeper, very highly rated. Of course, he'll be replacing Jack Bonham, who's gone to Stoke. Tom King has left Newport and he has gone to Salford, of course, after they lost Vaclav Kladky. You're sort of seeing the domino effect now of the goalkeepers The little merry-go-round that is happening on, but a really good move that for Tom King. Of course, finished the season very well with Newport, so it'll be interesting to see how he gets on at Salford. And Jordan Archer, great move for him as well. He's gone from Middlesbrough to QPR. Of course, QPR, as mentioned, have lost both Liam Kelly and Joe Lumley this summer, so no doubt Jordan Archer will go in to compete with Senny Dien.
Very good, Richard. I have found the story. I'm guessing a lot of listeners have already been aware of it. I'm sure they were shouting at their set saying, you should know this, and we should know this. It was the 2018 World Cup, wasn't it? All roads lead back to this game. It was the England-Belgium group game again, where Adnan Januzaj scored, and it was the horrendous punditry. Do you remember?
That's right.
ITV, Lee Dixon saying his mate down the pub told him he went with the wrong hand, which effectively spawned this podcast. So funny you should mention it.
There you go.
But it was apparently Courtois said something about Pickford showboating rather than actually trying to make the save. And Gareth Southgate alluded to a conversation he had with Martin Thomas, of course, the under 21 goalkeeping coach, was he at England at the time? Yeah, he said that he was talking about a couple of goalkeepers, and size wise, at the end of the day, we're talking about a Cadbury's cream egg between them in terms of their reach or their height.
There you go.
So that was it.
There you go. We found it.
We did. I've got another quote, actually. This is from Zaki Wala.
Okay.
In his first interview with AFC Wimbledon, he said, you know the saying, you hang around a barbershop long enough, sooner or later, you're going to get a haircut. Do you know that saying?
I mean, I do now. I do now. And I mean, I don't know if that necessarily works. I don't think this is great advice to young goalkeepers out there. You know, if you hang around Man United every day, that does not mean they're going to give you a contract. But no, look, I am delighted for him because, as I say, lovely, lovely lad. Top goalkeeper. It'd be really interesting to see if he does get his chance.
Lovely. Okay, Richard, we are nearly at the end of the podcast, but it is time, isn't it? The Attack goalkeeper gloves, the blackouts are here for one lucky patron. We've got our Wheel of Names generator.
We have.
So do you remember we used something very similar when we did the Instagram Lives for Joe Hart's shirt more than a year ago, by the way.
Is that right?
That's how long, that's crazy, isn't it, that time?
Yeah. I see lots of names. Lots of names I recognise. Lots of all of our patrons. Thank you very much. Lots of names, actually. So thank you very much. I was going to name some, but then that could...
You don't want to do that.
No, that could extend this podcast quite. But I can assure you that you are all there.
You are all there. Very Wheel of Fortune-esque, this, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah, it's... I mean, no expense spared.
Okay, are you ready?
I've never been more ready.
Here we go.
Oh, you can hear the noise. That is exciting. Oh, this is going to be over very quickly.
No.
Who's that?
Oh.
Who did you think it was going to be? It was one off.
It was one off.
One off who?
A certain James Beadle.
Was it really?
Yes, it was. Oh, one off of James Beadle, but it was not James Beadle.
It was just before James Beadle. The winner is Bert Shane Madhu.
Yes, wonderful stuff. So, Bert, we will be in touch with you very shortly. You have won a pair of Attack goalkeeper gloves. So, well done you.
There you go. Congratulations,
something to,
Bert.
Something to soften the blow. If you are English, of course. We don't know that.
We don't know. Bert, it's quite an English name.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
American, who knows?
Could be American. Yeah, true.
Could be many nationalities.
I mean,
really,
that's true. I've just completely gambled there.
Okay, Richard. It's been hard talking today. It's been a very strange day, a very strange couple of days. But before we go, just your final thoughts on the Euros as a whole from a goalkeeping perspective.
Oh, final thoughts. This feels a bit Jerry Springer. It used to be Jerry Springer, didn't it? Final thoughts.
It was,
indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. Look, of course, loads. There's been loads to talk about. It's been really enjoyable, hasn't it, the last few weeks?
Yeah, it has, actually.
Talking about
the
many different goalkeepers, so many top performances, the odd error, of course, that we've dissected and discussed. But no, look, it's been nice. Certainly for us here on this podcast, where the majority of what we do is obviously based in England, obviously primarily Premier League down to League Two. So it's been really nice to see a lot of these other goalkeepers at close quarters. You know, so many that I'd love to see play over in England at some point. I'm sure that several we will see. But, you know, Jan Sommer, I know we spoke about him a lot in a couple of the podcasts, some very good performances from him. Of course, we spoke a lot about Donnarumma and just continuing to build that reputation. Always great to see the likes of Manuel Neuer. And in the group stages, the likes of Danny Ward, a couple of excellent performances from him. I could go through a lot of the goalkeepers and a lot of the standout performances. But no, for me, it's just been nice, I think, to see lots of different goalkeepers. And for me at the moment, the standard of goalkeeping is high. I think the goalkeeping's forever changing. We're seeing goalkeepers play with more and more bravery, certainly when it comes to distribution. We've seen that a lot in the recent years in the Premier League, but certainly seeing it on the European stage. There's some top goalkeepers out there. So look, to round it up, I've just waffled there for about 2 minutes, Matthew, and I don't really know if I've got a succinct final thought to share with you. I'll tell you what, you've learned a hell of a lot about goalkeeping, given that it is now 3 years, isn't it? It is 3 years since we started this, which is crazy to think, actually, that it was essentially all born out of that Belgium game that we came up with the Goalkeepers Union podcast concept, which now has many thousand listeners every week, and we're very grateful for that and what have you. So go on, I'm going to throw this back at you now that you being a goalkeeping geek of sorts.
Okay, so what's the question?
The question is final thoughts, goalkeeping, Euro 2020.
To be fair, it's not too dissimilar to you. I think what I love about major international tournaments, and the world's a lot smaller now, isn't it, with social media and YouTube, and that these magical, mythical players that we used to see in the 80s and 90s only ever at international tournaments are more commonplace now because you can just access them at any time. But there is still some goalkeepers, specifically talking about goalkeepers, that pop up and you think, decent. We don't often see them who come to the fore. Lukas Radetzky of Finland, for example, coming to the fore. Peter Galashi, yes, we see him in the Champions League, but still coming to the fore for Hungary. Jan Sommer, we spoke about on numerous occasions throughout the past couple of weeks on the podcast. And I think that's good to see. It's the goalkeepers that aren't the massive names that actually make a name for themselves in an international tournament. And I've actually been pleasantly surprised as well with the punditry. I know that we flagged a few errors, which are customary, but it does feel like the perception towards goalkeepers just slightly shifted in this tournament. And there was maybe a little bit more recognition just thrown their way. And I'm just delighted, and we'll finish this circular because we'll finish on Jordan Pickford. I'm just delighted for him at the tournament that he's had. And I really do hope that he can press on next season as an Everton goalkeeper and maybe move on elsewhere. Who knows? Maybe at some point now, after a tournament like that, he might look, because we saw this 3 years ago in 2018 with Jordan Pickford, didn't we? And we thought, okay, now he's going to go on to the next step. And arguably, can we say he went backwards or he plateaued perhaps in his club career? Now he's kicked on again in an international tournament. Will other clubs potentially be coming and looking at him?
It will be interesting, certainly. It's been quite an episode.
It has, Richard. We're going to take a little break now, aren't we? We've got a few feature interviews lined up. They will come over the course of the next month or so, but we'll have a couple of weeks off.
I think it's good that we do. I think it's important. After what happened yesterday, we just need to relax, breathe, gather our thoughts, reset, maybe go on a holiday. Who knows? Not together, but...
Absolutely not together.
Absolutely not, no. But maybe just a short break and then we'll be back with a vengeance.
Lucky enough to be invited around for a cup of tea, for crying out loud. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, keepers
away.